Well, Daniele, the script of this game is very similar to game one of this series, where it felt like the Blue Jays had a lot of chances. They ultimately didn't cash in on many of them. 2-for-12 with runners in scoring position. 9 men left on base. Berríos was grinding. I mean, he still gave them 6 innings of 2-run ball. And we'll talk about him. But, I mean, once again, consistency just out of reach for the Jays in this one, which is a 3-2 loss to the Tigers. The Jays fall 2 games back below 500. They do lose the series. They are now 22-24 on the year, but it was a very close, I still think entertaining series with the visiting Detroit Tigers, but you can't help but feel like there were a lot of really big opportunities missed in this one.
Oh, I mean, show a series defined by missed opportunities. And certainly this game in isolation today, you think about the various times where they got runners on early in innings with plenty of outs to a flexibility with outs to play with. They had the first two guys reach show in an inning 3 times today and amounted all of that into 2 runs. And in fact, one of them was left to the responsibility of Ernie Clement cashing in with an opposite field 2-out single in the 4th inning. So it was there for the taking. And Jackson Jobe certainly gave them plenty of opportunities to do damage. They had a decent game plan, it seemed, at least offensively to start the game, where attack the fastball. We know he's a guy that wants to throw the heater, and even if it's at 97, 98, sure, stuff is electric, but at this stage of his career, 22 years old, going through the process of trying to become a seasoned major league starting pitcher, he's still learning the ropes, and he's more of a thrower than he is a pitcher in sequencing and location. It's just the stuff is so electric. But he left the door open, show. He gave them plenty of opportunities. Even as this game progressed and you got into their bullpen, they just didn't have that one timely hit that they so desperately needed. You were just waiting, sitting there waiting for that moment. Okay, is it going to come? You got a runner in scoring position. Is it going to come? You have your best players at the plate late in the game. Are they going to deliver? And the answer was, unfortunately, no. In the grand scheme of things, as you alluded to, I would agree. I would concur. It was a really entertaining series, top to bottom, from Friday all the way through to the ball game tonight, today in the series finale. And they were separated by 1 run across the 3 games. Yeah. Still, you can't help but feel like you walk away, if you're the Toronto Blue Jays, knowing what your schedule entails, knowing you have San Diego coming in here on Tuesday. It's a bit of a missed opportunity when you're playing against a team that has the best record in baseball and you just cannot come up with that big timely hit late in the game to get you over the top.
The Blue Jays lose 3-2 to the Tigers. The series overall, Detroit 9 runs, the Blue Jays 8 runs, but ultimately they do fall after this series loss to 22-24 on the year. You're listening, of course, to Jays Talk Show. Ali, Daniele Franceschi with you. We're live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're also streaming on sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app. You can give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. You can text us as well, 590-590, name and location. The People's Text Line, always open. Standard messaging and data rates may apply. We will get to Berríos. So I do want to talk about him today, Daniele, but it is certainly tough to put this one on him when he only allows 2 runs over 6 innings of work, right? I mean, this one, I think without a doubt, falls on the offense. Jackson Jobe, like you said, showed off the potential, but he was certainly gettable today. I mean, I think you're seeing with Jobe, just because I'm sure we're not going to talk a lot about him, but I think you're seeing why people, even if he has struggled to stay entirely consistent over the course of his very young career, I think you are seeing why people are excited about him. I mean, in Bose, I think it was his second AB today, Jobe threw him a 97-mile-an-hour slider that ran 19 inches. Like, that is absolutely bonkers. Like, it started as a strike and then broke all the way back in towards Bo, and all he could do was shake his head. Like, I would say nobody gets a head off that pitch. Not even the game's best pitcher or hitters are going to get a hit off that pitch. So, I mean, you're seeing the tantalizing potential, but he had a lot of traffic today. And the Blue Jays, like you alluded to, just could not take advantage. I mean, I'm by no means saying it's all on Anthony Santander, because Vladdy was up at the plate with a game tying or even potential game winning opportunity. Bo right before him actually grounded into what probably should have been the game ending out and only gets a board because of a bobble by Ibanez. Like, you needed more from everyone, but Santander 0-for-4 today with 3 strikeouts. I mean, That's a tough look. Like, the whole offense remains inconsistent, certainly, but even with the injuries, hip and shoulder for Santander, that's a real tough go.
Oh, we definitely need to talk about Anthony Santander. No question about it, because this has become a running theme now. And in April, even going into the first week of May, we could sit back and say, okay, it's okay, take a breath, take a beat, because historically he's always been a slow starter. And statistically speaking, it's not a track record of 1 or 2 years. No, no, no. There's an extensive track record there with this guy having very, very, very pedestrian production in the month of April throughout his career. But then once May rolls around, weather gets better, a little bit more seasoned in terms of just seeing more pitches and getting more at-bats, getting more comfortable, he was taken off. Well, it's now the middle of May, effectively, and he still looks completely bewildered in the box. And in fact, Joe, I'd kind of argue it looks worse, right? Like, he's being fooled a lot. And I think to the last at-bat he had, it was his second 8-pitch at-bat of the day, resulting in a strikeout, as you mentioned, the third of the day for him, after going 0-for-4 to cap an 0-for-4 day. And the sequencing of the pitches, right? He's just doesn't know what he's looking for in the box, right? He's swinging in fastball counts. He's waiting for off-speed pitches. And in off-speed counts, he's looking for fastballs. It's just confusing to see a player and a hitter of that pedigree look so dysfunctional, look so uncomfortable in the box. And it is really alarming. It really is alarming, because what was giving me hope in the first month of the season, really the first 5 weeks before we had the bizarre situation with his injury or right. omission from the lineup within this last 7-8-day period, what was giving me hope is that even though he was striking out a lot and wasn't hitting for average, you still saw the glimpses where when he is making contact, boy, is that ball flying off his bat. We're not seeing it as much lately in that regard, right? So that in and of itself is a red flag for me. I am a little bit concerned. I was preaching for the first 4 weeks, hey, don't worry about it. Don't be too concerned about it. But I'm worried. I'm worried about what we're seeing from Anthony Santander and the quality of at-bats that he's putting together. And so it's also indicative of how they're feeling internally right now. You know, today he hit fifth. But effectively, if George Springer's in the lineup, what it means is he would be probably hitting sixth in the order. So they clearly know he's got some things he needs to iron out here. And he needs to gain some confidence fast, because they desperately need that bat and his production.
Yeah, and what now, 46 games played this season? Yeah, I'm with you that I'm past the idea that he's a slow starter. I mean, and maybe he still is, but it's May 18th today, and we're well past the quarter pole mark of the season. So if that's the case, then I'm out on the idea that it's a slow start. It has now gone from a slow start to a bad start. Mike in Victoria on the text line, 590-590, name and location is simple. No more talk of slow start for Santander. Between spring training and regular season games, Jays have played 74 games. Next year, let's move him lower until at least he can be above the Mendoza line. And I think what Mike is saying is, a lot of people have texted in to say, well, if you know he's a slow starter, don't bat him third every single game. And I understand the desire, because when he is not batting like he's not hitting like he is right now, if you're heading him behind Vladdy, it makes a lot of sense. The only problem is when you're not getting a ton of power from Bo, Vladdy, or Santander, it looks real bad, right? I can't help but think back to the offseason, and Barker said this a million billion times, that the team needed not one but two thumpers, right? And that's one of my favorite words that Barker says, thumpers. And the Jays went out there and they got one. But when your thumper, your big prized free agent acquisition, is not even hitting like for average, when he's not even hitting at anything considered close to an MLB replacement level, like he's hitting close to a level where you'd like DFA most guys if they didn't have so much money attached to him, right? So when that's what you're getting out of the big free agent acquisition, and you're not getting much from anywhere else, I've said this a million times, but you have to walk the tightrope so finely to the point where even a grindy, gutted out start from Berríos that ultimately only allowed two runs still isn't good enough.
Yeah, it's what we talked about before the game too, because, you know, it's great we can highlight a lot of the excellent contributions from the bottom half of your lineup, and guys that are really making a positive impression, whether it's a Nathan Lucas, obviously Alejandro Kirk in this recent stretch where he's been really good, even George Springer being unexpectedly great for the first 6 weeks of the season. And, you know, you can talk yourself into some of these other guys that are showing you something. That's great, but it means nothing if the main contributors, the key cogs in your lineup, aren't doing it. If they aren't delivering, you're going to be in trouble. It's as simple as that, Joe. And I think even from Santander's perspective, you know, I'm glad you referenced what Barker always talks about and what he's been preaching, you know, going back to last October, really even middle of last season when we had to start ahead and saying they need not one guy, they need two guys. They need two thumpers that you compare with Vlad and Bo to make you feel good about the top four guys in your order, and you feel like you have a little bit more length and depth. And why it's important, they went and they spent on Santander, but you can't tell me that he's not gripping the bat a little bit tighter and he's not feeling the weight, right? He's not feeling like he has a boulder on his shoulder right now because he knows they are desperately relying on him to provide power. They explicitly signed him for the sole purpose of hitting the ball over the fence and driving runs in. That's why he's here. And it's difficult for him to also carry that weight around because Vlad and Bo, statistically speaking, have been fine. Their numbers are okay. They're not prodigious home run hitters in a traditional sense. You want more power from them, certainly. But literally, the one guy in the lineup that is being asked to, hey, stand in that box and you better hit homers. Otherwise, we're done. We're in bad shape. It's number 25. It's Anthony Santander. And I can't help but think, I saw him, you know, foul off two pitches. One was a changeup, middle, fouls it off in a leverage count. Fastball, 93 miles an hour, middle, fouls it off where he almost struck out. You'll remember it popped in and out of the catcher's mitt. Dingler couldn't hang on to it for the foul tip strikeout.
Right.
You don't see a guy with his talent miss those pitches. Like, those are mistakes, and it's rare you get two in one at bat. And he still couldn't convert. I just think he's feeling it. He's wearing it a little bit right now because he feels the pressure of what they want and need him to do in order for this team to be successful.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Those are the numbers for you to call. We'll go back to the text line in a sec, 590-590, name and location. But let's go to the phones. Let's go to Russ in New Jersey. Russ, welcome to Jay's Talk. What's on your mind?
I'm in Toronto.
All right.
I just came out of... Just throwing the Leaf game, but went to the Blue Jay game today. I thought you guys would be talking about Alejandro Kirk's infield single. Come on. That was something. But you know what the most frustrating is, and it's obvious I'm not going to, you know, Santander's been terrible, but what's the most frustrating is this division is so there. You know, we all thought, and I keep saying this, that Baltimore was going to be this team. They fired their manager. They're still getting clobbered. Boston's not that good. I don't believe the Yankees are that good. You know, if we got a little bit pitching that we've gotten for the most part, and I know the ERA doesn't prove it, and Barrios today wasn't great, but he bared down with guys on base, and he made the big pitches when he had to, and it's just frustrating because you think, hey, we don't have to be that great to win this division this year. I don't know what it's going to take yet, but I don't see anybody run away. In the past, if you had a record 2 games under 500, 46 games into the year, you would have probably been 8 games out of the division lead. So they still have a chance to put this together. I know it's definitely frustrating to watch, but it just, you know, you just think, like, what could be here, you know? Boston, I know a lot of people love Boston. Barker said on the air he had a friend thought Boston's going to run away with it. I never saw that in Boston. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you just think, like, what if? What if this team can get the big hits? And, you know, in the first inning, we got a little unlucky. You know, Varsho hits a rocket. Varsho hit 3 rockets,
yeah.
And the one he hit the softest ball he hit, he got a double. The other two, he got robbed. So it's a little frustrating, but listen, I don't know what's going to happen, but there's still hope because this division is not that good.
Before you go, Russ, puck drop of Game 7 is about less than 3 hours. You got a score prediction for us since you're going to the game?
I don't want to talk about it. I've been going to games since Sittler and Lanny and Tiger, and I still it's amazing. I'll tell you how many former Leafs. Like, I speak to Russ Cortinel a lot. He plays for the Leafs. I speak to him a lot. We're still very friendly, and these guys like love the Leafs. They just love the Leafs, and there's so many guys pulling for the Leafs. And listen, I think it's going to be you're taking on the Stanley Cup champions. I don't want to jinx it. I think, listen, you know what? Everyone thought we were dead after game five, and they came up and they played the game. So you're hoping that, you know, game seven, the Leaf game is a little different. I flew in for game six last year against Boston, and we won, and then we lost to Pasternak game. So I don't want to predict. I can't predict. I'll just watch and be very, very nervous tonight.
All right. Well, thank you for the call, Russ. Enjoy the game. Thanks for calling in and making the flight to Toronto. I thought we might get a score prediction, but I guess not, Daniele.
Leaf fans, they are very, very superstitious, and they are set up for their condition for disappointment.
I feel it. As someone who's born and raised in Toronto, I understand Russ's his reticence. But, okay, let's talk about what he said about the division, because I'm kind of with him in that. Like, I have, over the course of a very long period of time, hoped that the American League East would not every single year just consistently be a juggernaut year in and year out. Like, oh, this year it's the Rays that's winning 100 games. Oh, this year it's the Yankees going to the World Series. Oh, this year the Orioles are winning 100 games now, right? Like, you gotta think to yourself, okay, well, when will it be the Jays' turns to experience some kind of success in the American League East with this set of players? I mean, you look at the scoreboard today. I mean, to Russ's point, the Orioles got pummeled again. They're 15 games below 500. I mean, the Jays do lose, but the Rays lose in the Citrus Series to the Marlins down in Miami. I mean, the Red Sox went up 4-0 and then got absolutely pummeled by the Braves. So, like, it's not as though this is the same division in years past, right? You have an opportunity here. But I made this comment yesterday, but the monkey paw has somewhat curled, because not only is the rest of the division not so great, the Jays are also lacking this consistency. So I think it's definitely doable. But I mean, if you're going to be plus minus 2-3 games above or below 500 for the rest of the year, I mean, you got to do a little bit better than that.
Oh, you do. It's inevitable. There's going to be a handful of teams that create a little bit of separation, even if it's not a drastic gulf between teams that are in the wild card picture. There will still be, and we know this, it happens every year, there will be enough separation created. But it is fascinating when it comes to this division in particular, that it's always been such a gauntlet, right? It's the powerhouse division in the American League, and you feel like you get if you're any franchise in this AL East, it's you have bad luck because of the division you play in. But let's call it what it is right now, show. In 2025, it's kind of mediocre, right? Because there are teams with a lot of question marks. And I know you've probably heard this line a bunch as well. Blair loves to say it all the time, every day almost on the daily, Blair and Barker, where Jeff refers to the best team in the American League East right now. It's Aaron Judge and Max Fried. That's the best team in the American League East right now at this moment. Judge hitting over 400, Max Fried carrying the Yankees pitching staff. And that's kind of it. The Red Sox, I like Barker. I feel very strongly. I think Boston's got a good opportunity to be the team that takes a huge step forward this year in that division. But Baltimore, to say you're stunned with what's gone on there, I think that's kind of an understatement. Did we think there were maybe some flaws? Sure. But did you expect them to be 15 games under 500 through 45 games played? I don't think anybody saw that coming. So the opportunity exists. When's the last time we looked at the totality of this division and you had only one team with a record that is above 500? When did the AL Central all of a sudden replace the AL East as the powerhouse division in the American League? It is wild, and the opportunity does exist to make up ground and to play well against your divisional opponents in 2025. It's why the Jays do have one of the more difficult schedules on paper. Going into the season, it was that way. Strength of schedule was not something that was particularly favorable to them. But they've done okay up until this point. You just feel like, show, and as somebody that watches and covers the team on a daily basis, there have been a lot of moments where you're saying, man, in 3 months, they might wish they had that game, right? They might wish they got that one. And today's another example of that, where you had plenty of chances with runners in scoring position and even your best hitters at the plate, including in the ninth inning.
Yeah.
You just need the one big swing. And who knows what the rest of your season looks like. Or when September rolls around, those 5-6 games that you had in April and May, they come in handy. And that's where the Jays find themselves right now. You just hope it doesn't bite you when you get deeper into the schedule.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Jen in Toronto. Jen, welcome to Jays Talk. What's on your mind?
Oh, hi. Same old thing. Yeah, I know the AL East is weak. And the thing is, the Central's so good that if we come second even to the Yankees, it means nothing. But as I said before, Santander, I mean, he can't muster a sac fly, a ground ball, anything. He's been up, it seems, always and always and always. And what are your thoughts on putting them down the eighth or whatever? The man has no confidence, or he's hurt. I don't know what it is. I know he wasn't hurt. Luckily, they have the excuse his shoulder sore. So, but, I mean, he just hasn't done anything. I mean, he's minus six or whatever.
Hey, yeah, Jen, appreciate the call. Thank you so much, as always. I mean, if you're talking about Santander, Daniele going on the IL, I suppose that's possible. I kind of wonder if, like, a reason he hasn't gone on the IL is because there are not a lot of other options right now on the team. Like, I suppose you could call Roden back up. I think he's been hitting a little bit better as of late. I suppose you could get away with doing that because Roden's probably not getting, as long as Lucas and Barger, who both have been looking pretty good, all things considered, I mean, no one looked great today, so, you know, today notwithstanding, but generally speaking, they both have WRC pluses that are pretty positive for guys of their stature, all things considered. So unless one of those guys really falls off, it would seem unlikely that Roden gets called back up. But I mean, gosh, the problem with putting Santander in IL, for example, I think is just because there's no one else, it makes that decision so much harder to the point where you kind of have to hit him. But because he's been so poor, I think it begs a valid question. I think Jen got to it to a certain extent that maybe you should try it with someone else just to give him a bit of a blow right now, just to see if that works. I'm not saying he's like overworked or, you know, he's poor him because he's getting paid a lot of money. But I mean, at the same time, if it's not working, like, you got to try something to spark this guy at some point.
It's a valid point. Given what we've seen, I think nothing should be off the table. In saying that, Cho, in terms of bumping him even further down, I do think when the lineup is whole, and by that I mean George Springer is included, obviously today gets a day off, he pinch hits but doesn't start, I think you're probably going to see him hit sixth in the lineup. I think that's, and I don't know that it's going to get any worse than that.
So Varsho and Kirk hitting higher than him, I guess.
Correct. Yeah. Varsho and Kirk hitting higher than him, Springer included there, and then obviously Bo and Vlad. Yeah. I just don't know, can you justify hitting, you know, Ernie Clement ahead of him? I get it. Based on the numbers, maybe. But it's still Anthony Santander, and you hope at some point it's going to turn, and the bona fides are going to eventually kick in, and he's just going to go back to being the guy that he's been throughout his major league career for the most part, which is somebody that hits 30-plus homers and drives in 90-plus runs, because that's what he's always done. He's never been a guy that hits for average. So we should never look at the on-base percentage or the average. What we should be focused on is he hitting the ball over the fence? Is he doing damage? Because that's the only area that he's been consistent throughout his major league career. It's never that the quality and consistency of the at-bats are great, but it's just that he does a lot of damage because he's a very naturally gifted hitter, and there's a lot of violence when he makes contact with the baseball.
That'd be impressive, though.
That would be impressive as well. But he's got a lot of power, clearly. I did want to, and as Jen was talking, there's one thing that really resonated with me as well. Going back to the fourth inning today, where she joked about, you know, can't even hit a sac fly. He steps up to the plate, Santander. It ends up being an 8-pitch at-bat, his first of two on the day. But he has runners on the corners with nobody out and can't find a way to get the ball in the outfield to cash a runner. And when you can't do that and you're seeing that many pitches, great, you work an 8-pitch at-bat, but your job there is literally, let me find any way possible to put this ball in play so that runner from third base with no outs can come home to score, right? And they almost it almost came back to bite them, because I referenced it earlier in our post-game show where I mentioned the two-out RBI from Clement, where he bails him out, essentially.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
And makes it so that the Jays don't walk away with only one run in that inning. Instead, they're able to even the score in the bottom of the fourth. That ends up being the only offense they were able to muster all day. And the one other item, I've been sitting on this for a couple days now, Sean, and I'm not sure if you caught on to this over the last 48 hours when it comes to Santander. The whole confluence of events leading up to today, where he gets back in the lineup, and the explanations we've been given over the last 48 hours, it's been kind of confusing, perplexing even. You go to Friday, and we know John Schneider has his regular Friday hit that he does with Blair and Barker. He joins them every Friday. So the guys asked him on Friday afternoon, just hours before the opener here against Detroit, ask him about Santander, what's going on, you know, and how he's feeling, and where his mindset is right now. And John's not one to ever kind of sugarcoat things or mislead people. I think maybe that's a better way to put it. And he made no mention of any physical issues or, hey, he's working through things. It was all about how he's working his tail off. He's grinding. We've got all different coaches that are having conversations with him. We're trying different things. No allusion to the fact that there's something bugging him. And then we learn after the game on Friday when he doesn't play, oh, he's got some type of shoulder issue. And then we get an explanation yesterday where it's hip impingement. And now he's playing today. So there's a little bit of contradiction in the messaging in the last 3 days when it comes to his status. And I just overall, I found that a little bit curious. I thought it was worth raising because they usually are very good with that stuff. And so I don't know if it indicates they don't even have a full read on what's going on, but clearly something is going on in addition to him just not having the level of confidence he needs when he's in the box right now.
See, I will disagree with you in the sense that I do think John Schneider does, generally speaking, he's pretty honest and open. I don't know if that I would agree that the team is very open and honest about their communicating of injuries. I would actually say the opposite. I would say Atkins and, well, that's Shapiro, because he doesn't really deal with this stuff on a day-to-day basis as far as I understand. But Atkins and the rest of the front office who do deal with this stuff are like, I would say they're like the most opaque front office in maybe all of baseball. Like they generally speaking, do not give you very open updates until like the literal last possible second. But I do agree with you, because I remember we did on Friday, we did like a podcast only edition. Was it Friday? Yeah, a podcast only edition, yes, of Jays Talk, yeah, and because of the Leafs game. And I remember on Jays Talk, I questioned at the very beginning of the game, hey, like, it was bizarre that Santander, I know Schneider said in his pregame availability, the one that was on camera, hey, like, we, you know, we're just giving Santander a blow, or it's, yes, a lot of good messaging, but still, he's working his tail off. All the things you were saying, he said both to Blair and Barker and to Hazel and Arden and the cameras. And then he doesn't pinch hit at the end of that game in a situation where I think it was Clement who pinch hit at the end of that game with two on and two out. And obviously it didn't work out. They lose 5-4. And I remember questioning, like, why didn't they go to Santander? And then the next day you find out he was injured, and you're like, oh, well, they clearly knew this before. So anyways, I do think maybe there's a little bit of a divide between what, like, John Schneider is allowed to say sometimes to the media. And I think a lot of teams are like that. But yeah, I do think the Blue Jays are not, maybe in the middle of the pack, maybe closer, right, towards the bottom of the pack when it comes to transparency around injury when it comes to their players. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go back to the phones, and let's go to Frank and Barry. Frank joining us here on Jays Talk. Frank, what's on your mind?
Just a little bit of a defense for Santander.
Sure, go ahead.
I'm not sure where he batted in the lineup for Baltimore those last few years, but they had a pretty good hitting team. Now he comes over to a new team, big salary. I think he's trying too hard, mm-hmm, for one thing. And if I'm not mistaken, he's knocked in 16 runs. They brought him over to knock in runs. And Guerrero, he's going to own 20. That's only a 4-run difference.
Yeah, hey, Frank, I appreciate the call. And I see what you're getting at. You're getting at the idea that, like, it's not all on Santander.
I think he's over-trying.
Right.
And one other question, but don't mind.
Sure, go ahead.
Your coach took out a guy pitching that was pitching really good, has been pitching good,
right,
to bring in that young guy. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand that move.
All right, well, thank you for the call, Frank. I appreciate you joining us. Look, I will say, I did not have a quibble with taking out Berríos, because Berríos, and we haven't really talked about Berríos, I suppose, Daniele. And
he was actually referencing the Fluharty.
Oh, Fluharty. Okay,
yes,
I thought he said
two outs in that inning.
I thought he was talking about the starter. Because if he's talking about the starter, I have no quibbles to taking out Berríos, because he had really grinded. If he's talking about taking out Fluharty for Braden Fisher, I mean, that is, I got to say, that is ballsy, because Fisher, that was easily the highest leverage moment of Braden Fisher's entire career. And again, I mean, I don't know. He does obviously give up the run, Fluharty. It was an inherited run for Fluharty that goes to his ledger, because Fisher gives up the hit. Fisher did come out for the next inning and still got out of it, so definitely positive-ish. But I can understand the frustration, because Fluharty has been so consistent. I could also understand people quibbling with taking out Fluharty for Fisher specifically. I mean, you could have, if you wanted to, gone to Jimmy Garcia, who had only thrown, I think, 8 pitches yesterday. So I think that was definitely a possibility as well.
The only thing if you really want to quibble with anything, and this is maybe nitpicking a little bit, but I'll present it as a caveat, although in the moment, it's not like I was terribly upset about it. In going away from Fluharty with 2 outs in the inning, and I think that would have been the 7th, 2 outs in the 7th, they lined it up perfectly where they found the right pocket to try and get him in. Kerry Carpenter, who doesn't hit lefties well at all, he's literally the most drastic splits-driven player in baseball. And if he could ever hit an ounce against left-handed pitching, guy would be an all-star with the level of production he gives you. That's how dynamic of a talent he is in the box. He just can't hit lefties. So it's Kerry Carpenter, it's Gleyber Torres, who's in there as the righty in the two-hole, and then it was Riley Green. So they were banking on, hey, can you get us through those three guys in a clean inning so that we don't have to take you out, with Spencer Torkelson stepping up as the cleanup hitter? Well, that didn't happen, obviously, and so they were predispositioned already. We're going to make that change regardless if Torkelson gets up there. And I think it's fine. Like, the process was fine. I understand it. The only thing you can quibble with, Show, potentially, is instead of going to Braden Fisher, you go to Jimmy Garcia first.
Yeah, yeah.
That's it. That's the only thing you can sort of argue in that spot, because the game was tied. And Braden Fisher comes on, and he inherits a runner in scoring position, and the second pitch he throws is Spencer Torkelson lining a base hit to center field that scores the go-ahead run. The Jays can't score, muster any other offense, and that's how we end up with our result today, 3-2. So in the highest leverage of moments in this game, I guess technically I'd rather see Jimmy Garcia with the ball in his hand standing on the rubber. He did end up pitching anyway later on. And I was almost the only part where I did get a little irritated, Show, in the ballpark, in between innings, after Braden Fisher retired the final out in the 7th, Jimmy Garcia got up to start throwing in the bullpen. And I was thinking, you could have did it 5 minutes ago, and he could have potentially been in the game, and you lose with one of your best two relievers on the mound. If it happens, it's more defensible than having a guy that's still getting his feet wet pitching in a big spot.
You have any thoughts before we go back to the phones on Berríos, just because we're talking about the pitching right now?
Yeah. I mean,
again, today was, I suppose, a mixed bag for him, right? 6 innings of work, 8 hits, 2 runs, both of which were earned early in the game. 1 walk, which is something we were talking about in the pregame. 4 strikeouts. Now, 8 hits, right? I mean, I think it was a mixed bag in the sense of command, but I do think the best two items for Berríos were today. One, he did manage to still pitch like relatively deep into this game to help out the bullpen, albeit ahead of an off day, but still. And two, I mean, despite looking somewhat scattered command-wise for a good chunk of the start, he only gave up 2 runs and 1 walk, and none of those runs came after the first inning, right? I mean, today was like relatively low for me on like the watchability scale for Berríos. But I mean, one aspect of his game I've always enjoyed is that even when he's battling, he somehow always seems to grind out a pretty decent start. I'm sure many people would agree that today was not a pretty start, but that he only allowed 2 runs over 6 innings of work where he didn't have his greatest stuff. Has like, I think you probably view that as a win, even though I'm not sure we learned anything new about him today.
I don't think we learned anything new. He gave them a chance to win. And I think for any of the starters in this staff right now, that's what you ask. That's what you're asking of them. You know, because show up until today, they had scored at least 3 runs in 15 of their last 16 games. So now this is the second time in their last 17 ball games where they've failed to score at least 3 runs. Berríos did more than enough. Even without his A stuff, his B stuff even, B-plus stuff, he still found a way to battle through the start and give you 6 innings on a day where you needed him to work deeper into the game because your bullpen, not that it's been terribly taxed, but certainly you had a handful of guys that had already pitched on back-to-back days. You needed him to give you at least 6 innings, and he did. He found a way. Now, if I'm going to identify one thing that really kind of concerns me moving forward here with him and has been a developing trend, you know, we've talked about the command and the location, specifically with his fastball, his sinker.
He missed
anything.
A spot a lot. He did.
He missed a ton of spots. Yeah. The one pitch show, I would be totally content if I never see him throw it again. I don't like the cutter whatsoever. It's 91, 92.
I knew you were going to say the cutter.
Show, it's 91, 92 miles an hour, and he missed his spot every single time with that pitch.
Yeah.
And I had the good fortune of sitting in your seat today, where you would normally be seated here at the Rogers Center, in between Ben and Chris as they're calling the game. And literally every time he threw the cutter, Chris was just losing his mind because it's 90. He even at one point called it, it's essentially a BP fastball.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas his sinker at least has the movement, and the four-seamer has more life with the velocity. The cutter doesn't accomplish anything. And, we clearly didn't have his best stuff. Spin rate was significantly down compared to any other outing this year. Velocity was right around where he usually is, but the location wasn't great. I'd be totally content. Please don't throw the cutter again. I would tell him, you are now banned from throwing the cutter. Done. Get rid of that pitch. Yeah. Get rid of it.
The cutter to McKinstry in the top of the first inning, like, it just didn't cut. And to your point, the four-seam fastball, because it didn't have the movement of a cutter, just looked like a 90-mile-an-hour fastball right down the middle. Guys, mm-hmm. as down the middle as you can throw a four-seam fastball, except it was a cutter, essentially. So I'm with you. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell. Let's go back to the phones before we take a break. Let's go to Ryan in Innisfil. Ryan, welcome to Jay's Talk again. What's up, man?
What's going on, fellas? How are we doing today?
Good. What's on your mind?
Today I want to just basically talk about, do you guys think that the, for lack of a better term, downfall of the offense and Vladimir and Bo's production pertains to not having enough power in the lineup? I'll give examples of it. In 2021, we had 7 players in the lineup with 20 home runs or more. Vladdy obviously had one of the greatest seasons we've ever seen that year. So maybe power is a contagious thing for him and not something that he can be the sparker of. In 2022, that number went down to 4. He still hit 30 home runs. The next year, it went down to 3, 27 home runs. Then the year after that, it went down to 0, back up to 30 home runs. So I'm not sure if there's something there, but it feels like he's never going to be the leader of it, but he's like the greatest follower you could ever ask for. I'm curious if that's kind of what you think, if you think the struggles he's having are purely just himself, or if you do think that maybe he requires a little spark from teammates. He needs everyone else to be hitting home runs for himself to actually be hitting home runs.
Hey, Ryan, appreciate the call as always, man. Yeah, look, in the offseason, Daniele, we talked a lot about how Vladdy could do from seeing better pitches with the idea of having better protection. Right. And I think you kind of figured that would come with Anthony Santander. I don't want to like spend the whole episode of this the postgame show harping on Anthony Santander, because I think the point has been well made at this point. I think it's a little bit of column A. It's a boring answer, but it's a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. I think you're not benefiting from getting any protection, but also he's hitting the ball on the ground a lot. Right. And again, for me, it's not even the home runs. Like, I think it's just you want to see the hard contact, but you also want to see him lift the ball with that hard contact. Like, I would settle, I've said this many times, for Bo too, to a lesser extent from Bo, but certainly it applies to both of them. I would settle for hard contact and doubles into the gap just as much as I would settle for home runs from Vladdy. Like, yes, home runs are sexy and chicks dig the long ball and all that stuff. Yes, 1,000%. But I just, you're not even, quote unquote, seeing that from Vladdy. And it's funny to harp on him because, I mean, tonight or today, he had one hit and two walks, one for three. Mm-hmm. I believe he extended his on-base streak to 19 games, which is pretty incredible. So if you, like, again, I said this to Jesse yesterday. If you said player X walked twice and had a hit in a one for three day, he's batting .288 after his 46th game of the season and has a 19 game on base streak, you would say, great, sign me up for that. Like, give me more of that. But when you replace player X with Vladimir Guerrero Jr., it sounds a lot less sexy.
That's the key. The name on the back demands higher expectations. The expectations are higher. And it's not even just because of the name on the back and the lineage and even the track record for him as a big leaguer. It's the fact that Show just a short 3 weeks ago, a month ago, whatever it was, he signed a $500 million extension, right? There is pressure to perform. There are expectations. You are being relied upon to deliver like an Aaron Judge, like a Yordan Alvarez, like a Shohei Ohtani, like a Juan Soto. That's where you are now. That's where you are. You are in that same ballpark in terms of what the expectations are. Fair or not, that is where you are based on your positioning in the sport from a financial perspective. You better be that. Otherwise, yeah, we can't just evaluate you as the guy hitting seventh in the order that's hitting a .285 and has three homers, but he's getting on base. And like you said, we strip it all away and say, guy went one for three with two walks. Pretty good day. Pretty good day. It doesn't apply in the same fashion for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And I do agree with your answer and your point. I do think it's a little bit of column A, column B with this. I've always been, you know, kind of superstitious with Vladdy when it comes to where he hits in the order. You know, where has he been the most productive hitter during it's in the three hole. Yeah. The stats don't lie. And I know people say, that's just, you know, that's unpredictable. That's not necessarily, there's no rhyme or reason for it. There's, as the khakis would look, they can't find a metric to help you identify why he hits better in the three hole than the two hole. But all I know is there's enough of a difference there, particularly in terms of raw power production, extra base hits and home runs, that for me, I would feel compelled to hit him third, right? And part of the allure of having an Anthony Santander when they brought him in was you finally felt like maybe we actually have a cleanup hitter. Maybe the Blue Jays have actually answered that fill-in-the-blank question, who is the cleanup hitter for this team? And yet we haven't seen him hit, technically, cleanup in the four-hole. Now, last year he moved around to answer, and I think it was Frank that had asked the question earlier. Just
Baltimore?
In terms of, yeah, just of where he was. So, you know, his time was pretty evenly split between the 2-3-4-hole. A lot of, and even the five hole, he had a lot of regular at bats in the five hole, but he was a guy that always hit third or fourth. Yeah. So less with him in terms of, is there a comfortability with a specific spot because it was more dispersed? But for Vladdy, it's pretty clear. Last year, when he had a great year, hit over 300, had 30 homers again and 100 RBI, where did he hit? He hit third.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. I mean, look, if you're already moving things around because of the struggles of Anthony Santander, and it's not that Vlad is struggling, because, again, hitting .288 is pretty darn good, but that he's struggling to hit for power, if you are moving things around already, I mean, gosh, I said this a million times before the season started, as long as they're not married to locking guys into certain positions, I'm fine with them trying basically anything, right? Try whatever you need to try to get these guys going. And if you're continually having the same struggles over and over again, then you might as well try something different. I mean, batting Vladdy third, and I understand the argument about, the higher you bat, the more ABs you are typically likely to get. I do get, like, just math-wise, I understand that. But, I mean, you might as well try something right now. And again, I'm not sure what the answer would be for leadoff batter construction when it comes to the batting order. Maybe you do have to try something as, like, Ernie Clement batting leadoff in front of Bo and Vladdy, for example. But I'm open to them trying basically anything at this point. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Those are the numbers to call. We'll go to the text line as well, 590-590, name and location. We'll do all that after the break. We'll also take a look around the scoreboard, do some Bet365 standings updates, and continue taking your calls and texts as well. We're here until the bottom of the hour. You're listening to Jay's Talk. That's Daniele Franceschi. I'm Sho Ali. We're back in a flash on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
yeah, it's there. I just don't think it's been a consistent way of doing it. You know, I think the identity is a really close-knit group that is going to do anything that they can to win every single day. But I think hopefully it kind of just meshes together at some point where you're getting consistent offensive numbers. I thought the bullpen was great this series against this team. And you get good starting pitching. You know, I think that's kind of any manager's dream of a winning recipe. But it has been weird to where it's been kind of one extreme or the other. But these guys they'll figure it out. I think it'll come together. And when it does, it'll be a lot less stressful.
That is John Schneider speaking to the media postgame about the identity of the Toronto Blue Jays after a 3-2 loss to the Detroit Tigers. They do lose the series, the Blue Jays falling to 22-24 on this season. You're listening to Jays Talk as we welcome you back here, I guess, in two separate places. I'm at Baseball Control. Danielle is at the Rogers Center. But we're here still taking your text, 590-590, name and location, until the bottom of the hour, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, star 590, on your cell. What do you think of what Schneider said? Because I think he's onto something in the sense that, because I think one of the first words he said there was consistency, right? And you and I have used that word a million billion times, and I'm sure all the Jays fans and Jays media have used that word a million billion times as well. And yeah, I mean, the team has lacked consistency for long stretches, and even in like a micro sense, and today's game is another example of this, another microcosm of the whole season, Daniele, where, you know, Berríos guts through six innings, only allows two runs and a walk, but the bats aren't going. And on another night, the pitching is not great. To use Berríos as another great example, on a night where he allowed like six earned runs in right. his last start, right. the team explodes for nine runs and they lose that game, mm-hmm. right? So you haven't gotten every aspect of this team clicking all at the same time. And I mean, John Schneider clearly knows it.
So amazingly, doesn't it feel like the last time this team had a predictable, consistent offensive presence was like three seasons ago, the 2022 season?
Sure.
I know 2023 they made the playoffs, but boy was it a slog at times, right? A lot of one run victories, close games, bullpen was fantastic, obviously rotation that was a couple years younger, so less mileage, and all these guys were excellent, great stories to be had. But offensively, this team hasn't made it look easy or have days where they make it look really easy and routine and consistent since 2022.
Yeah.
We can't be dismissive of that. It's just a reality. And I think when it comes to the identity of the offense, we've been asking that question for more than two seasons now. And it's difficult to answer it. Because really, when we try to encapsulate what that looks like, I feel like we end up always leaning to, well, the two main guys, Bo and Vlad, and now we throw in a third because Anthony Santander, they signed a big check to bring him over to Toronto, and he's got some pedigree. So we always are going to defer to those guys and say, well, they got to drive the bus because the other guys haven't done it yet, right? They haven't proven it at the big league level like those three have. And it just becomes a recurring conversation that we have every few weeks because I don't know. I don't have the level of optimism that I think I should have for this type of team with the amount of money that's spent on this roster. There should be more belief that the offense can develop a higher degree of consistency and that you can have a couple of other guys to reference even what Ryan from Innisfil talked about with the lack of power spread out
right.
throughout the lineup. Don't you feel like you should have a little more of that? I think you should be able to make that case, especially with where they are right now and the amount of resources that have been invested in this team.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell. Those are the numbers to call. We'll go back to the text line as well, which we haven't done in a couple minutes, so we'll do that at 590-590, name and location. But first, the Bet365 standings update. With Bet365, you can watch thousands of live games, build your own bet, and you can even make a bet while the game is still being played. 19+, play responsibly, Ontario only. Well, we kind of talked about this a little earlier, Daniele, about the results in the American League and the division and how gettable it is. And I mean, gosh, today was another good day for everyone else in the division because, pardon me, it was a good day to win a game in the division because so many teams in the division lost today. So you have the Marlins thumping the Rays 5-1 in the finale of the Citrus Series on Rivalry Weekend. You have our game, a 3-2 Blue Jays loss to the Tigers. You have the Braves storming back with Spencer Schwellen back on the mound over the Boston Red Sox at Fenway Park. Braves win 10-4, and another loss for the Baltimore Orioles again to the Washington Nationals 10-4. The Nationals beat the Baltimore Orioles at Camden Yards. The Yankees game, the final game of the Subway Series, has not actually started yet. That is Sunday Night Baseball, so that game starts in a little under 2 hours in the Bronx. So having said all of that, so knowing that the Yankees result will change, here's what the American League East looks like right now. The Yankees are 26-19 ahead of Sunday Night Baseball. The Boston Red Sox are 23-25. The Blue Jays are 22-24. The Rays are 21-25. And the Baltimore Orioles, sheesh, they're 15-30. But I mean, like the percentage points here, you're separated by like literally fractions of a decimal point here, Daniele. I mean, like Boston is 23-25. That's a winning percentage of 479. The Blue Jays are 22-24 with a winning percentage of 478. So, I mean, gosh. But hey, I mean, to Jen's point from earlier, with the American League Central so good, you could, in theory, come in second place in this division and still not make the playoffs, depending on how things shake out for all of the Tigers, Twins, Guardians, and Royals.
Yeah, that's what's so bizarre about this, because the American League East has traditionally been that division where if you are the second place team, it's almost a lock you're going to be in the postseason. This year, it's completely different, because that AL Central has some legit heavy hitters, right? Kansas City, Austin Mackey, who's on the board today for us. I remember I called it, and Austin can attest to it. Before the 2024 season, I said, those Royals, they're coming. They're going to be very good. Bobby Witt Jr., but not just Bobby Witt Jr. They've got some horses, and sure enough, they are really good, and they're going to be here to stick around. The Tigers doing what they're doing, and this steady ascent that they're on, and of course, Minnesota's Minnesota, so you don't feel great, and how we can never dismiss Cleveland either, despite shipping off guys all the time, except for Jose Ramirez. They somehow are still very good, and it is going to be very dicey, even for whoever finishes second in this division in the American League East. It's no guarantee you're going to be in one of those wild card spots this year. It really isn't. And that just means you also better make hay in this division.
Yeah.
If Baltimore is going to be bad, like legitimately bad, and Tampa's going to be sort of average, you know, a 500 ball club, you better go in and when you play them, take advantage of those opportunities. Because the Yankees will be fine. And I think your biggest worry as a Jays fan, as a Red Sox fan, it would be if the Yankees approach the deadline and really make a big move. Not just improving on the fringes of the roster, but like making a big splash for somebody that's going to be another impact bat that they can add right next to Aaron Judge. If they do that, then they are very much legit. But there are still questions right now with how their roster is constructed. It's open, but I'm with you. There's no guarantee. No guarantee you finish second, you're making the playoffs, unlike previous years in this division.
590-590, name and location is the people's text line. Let's get to some text before we get out of here in a couple of minutes. Nicole in Ottawa on the text line saying, just wanted to say hello, show, no new notes. It's the same story over and over again. David in Dartmouth, it has often been said, and David I think is usually pretty positive. I'll give him some credit, right? So David says, it's often been said, good breaks come to good teams. This weekend series, the better team got the breaks. So our Blue Jays must play better, and just maybe they will get a break with those much-needed timely hits. This one's from Dan in Cole Harbor, also in Nova Scotia. Show, you can't win when you continually make base running errors and can't hit yourself out of trouble. And I mean, this is kind of related to that. Mo on the West Coast on Vancouver Island, Vladdy and Santander, because we were talking about these guys a lot tonight. 10 home runs and 36 ribbies combined. Torkelson from the Tigers alone has 12 home runs and 38 ribbies. Very disappointing. I mean, first of all, I will say Torkelson has put it together after a kind of like a disappointing start to his career. He was the first overall pick back in 2020 in what was a shortened season, and it was a shortened draft year as well in the MLB draft, which is usually like a million rounds long, and he was the first overall pick and hadn't really put it together. He finally is putting it together now, but that's still no excuse for not getting enough power, not just hitting well, but power out of your best players.
Torkelson's an interesting sort of case study, too, because, I mean, he was one of those can't-miss prospects. Like, similar to a Paul Skeens, right, the conversation that was had in Paul Skeens' draft year, and there have been others recently as well. Sometimes there isn't a consensus in baseball, like who the top dog is, but I remember the Torkelson year. He absolutely was. That being said, there's no world where the combination of Vlad and Anthony Santander should be singularly outperformed by Spencer Torkelson.
Yeah.
I don't say that to as an indictment on the player.
No, I'm with
you. He had 30-plus homers 2 years ago, had a down year last year, had 31 in his first full big league season 2 years ago, and I think there's plenty of upside there. But if you're going to make $500 million and you just signed a contract in excess of $100 million, you better outproduce a guy that is still very much in the early stages of his big league career. That's all I'm saying on that point. I do love, and I can't remember which texter it was that mentioned it, Joe, but the good team gets the bounces,
David and
type of thing.
Yeah.
Great point by David. Great point, because I will say, admittedly, hand up, very impressed with the Detroit Tigers, right? Fundamental baseball. You think about in this game, the two plays Akil Baddoo made in the first inning were outrageous.
Yeah, wild.
Absurd how good they were. And those are all symptoms of winning, right? Little things. And I know those were two incredible plays, but the fact that happens in inning number one, it's not an accident they end up losing. They win the game by one run, right? And that's where I talk about symptoms of winning. They do a lot of really good things to contribute to the end result after nine innings. And the Jays at times, do they do that? Yes. Are there other times where they miss opportunities? Sure. And that's where I think you see the difference between really good elite teams and those teams that are kind of just stuck in the murky middle and trying to find their footing. It's that element of making mistakes more frequently.
Well, Danielle, you talk about consistency, you talk about good things. It is always consistent and good when you're on Jays Talk with me. So thank you once again, man.
No, sure. Thank you very much. That's very kind. Touches me right in the heart. Feel it. Feel it. All the feels, as the kids say. Thank you.
That is the great Danielle Franceschi. I'm Sho Ali. And Blue Jays Baseball brought to you by the local family-owned Crown Rust Control Centers in Simcoe and Tillsonburg. Crown is proud to be Canadian-owned and operated since 1986. Protect your vehicle from rust today at your local Crown Rust Control Center or visit crown.com. Crown, Canada's number one rust protection. For Danielle Franceschi, Ben Schulman, Chris LaRue, Tom Young, Austin Mackey, Nick Blackmore, I'm Sho Ali. And that does it for us. And even though there is not Blue Jays baseball tomorrow on a holiday Monday, I know we usually want it, you do get your long weekend. So enjoy it. Happy May 2-4 weekend, everyone. Enjoy the hockey tonight, the last game of the second round. Leafs in the Game 7 matchup against the Panthers. Enjoy it, everyone. Blair and Barker are back on Tuesday. We'll talk to you later.